WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
There's a new rap record out featuring President Reagan on lead vocals, and in a moment we'll hear the record and meet the producer. The president will be even more surprised than you are when he hears about this record. The rap track was made without his knowledge or his participation. It was edited from 2 years of his public speeches, which were recorded and collected by composer Elliot Sokoloff, who collaborated with my guest, synthesizer player, record remixer, and producer Jack Waldman. Jack Waldman has recorded synthesizer tracks for records by many well-known rock and funk performers, including David Bowie, Grace Jones, Billy Idol, Madonna, Tom Tom Club, and Grandmaster Flash. He's worked with Jellybean Benitez, one of New York's premier dance record producers and remixers, and he's working on Eddie Murphy's forthcoming record. Waldman is a graduate of Juilliard School of Music, and he's performed classical jazz and experimental music. For the past 7 years, he's worked on rock and dance records, playing synthesizer tracks and doing remixes. He lives in New York. Welcome to Fresh Air, Jack Waldman.
Thanks. Hi.
Before we hear the Reagan record that you produced, maybe you can explain for us to us the origins of this record.
Okay. It actually began almost, you know, as you mentioned, 2 years ago. My partner, Elliot, had this idea to do a dance-type track and utilizing what he had available to him, which was basically tape recorder, putting in Reagan's voice as a vocal. And that was the seed idea from which we actually created this record.
Did you get permission or anything from the president to use his voice or the likeness of his voice for this record?
What we did was we found out that since it was all public domain, we didn't need his permission, and therefore, no, we didn't. But I can't wait to send him a copy.
Okay, before we talk more about the record, why don't we hear it? And this is See the Light, Feel the Heat. Is there any other introductory stuff you want to tell us before we hear it?
We're calling our group Air Force One.
Okay.
Nancy, give it to them, give it to them, give it to them, give it to them.
See the light. Feel the heat. charge? Who was running the store?
Nancy and I'm
See the Light, Feel the Heat, and it's a rap record using the voice of President Ronald Reagan. With me in the studio is the producer of that record, who also played the synthesizers on it, and my guest's name is Jack Waldman. Well, it's really unlike any other record I've heard. I expected when I heard that you were going to do a Reagan rap record that it was going to be very, very cute, mm-hmm. you know, that it would be cute one-liner jokes.
Right.
And you went for something very different than that in the record. Do you want to talk about what you wanted to get from the text?
Sure. Well, text-wise, we had so much to work with to start off with. I mean, Elliot just went wild recording Reagan, thanks to shows like All Things Considered. And we had I think we had nearly 175 phrases or more to choose from. And we realized that you know, we had potential there to do something more than just, you know, a typical kind of sampled vocal trick bag record, which, you know, although the technology for that kind of thing is still relatively new, I mean, people are getting used to hearing samples even if they don't know that they're hearing them. And we didn't want to get stuck in doing that. We wanted to try to create an illusion and create events both in the track and with his vocal, and I really feel like we were able to do it.
Now, I noticed you didn't say that you had 175 speeches, but you had 175 phrases.
Phrases.
How are you storing his speeches?
Well, originally, most of them were recorded right to a quarter inch, you know, just to a reel-to-reel tape machine. And we did a lot of the record by laying in phrases right off of tape onto the multi-track. But I shouldn't say a lot. About half of the material was done that way. And the other half was done with a digital synthesizer that I use. And they were stored on disk. And I have a small add-on computer to one of my synthesizers. And it enables you to sample any sound, acoustic, electronic, and manipulate it. And that's how we did a large part of that.
We're hearing a lot of records now with sounds not unlike the ones you're using on there, so maybe you can explain how some of these are achieved. For instance, one of the recurring sounds on the record that we just heard is the Nancy.
Right.
How do you get that?
Okay, well, let's see. I think the original phrase was taken from his acceptance speech. He said something about Nancy and I would be delighted to something. And so I sampled Nancy and I.
You want to explain what sampling is?
Sampling is, right. Basically, it's like recording to tape, except what you're doing is you're recording it into a computer. The computer's looking at a sound, let's say a half second, and dividing it, slicing it into 30,000 little pieces, and storing each of those slices as a number so that it can be recalled. And then what happens is, You have to get the levels right and, you know, do it a couple times, but you record it with the microphone right into the machine, and then when I play a key on the synthesizer, I hear Reagan's voice saying, Nancy and I, you know. And if I hold the key down just for a short, you know, not for the whole sample, it'll go Nancy, you know, then it becomes a keyboard player's game. And you can play the sample just as you would play a synthesizer sound, you know, on the keyboard. And you can also, it's also subject to pitch changes and, you know, other manipulations that you can do on the synthesizer, which is really fun.
So you can put anybody's voice on there and manipulate the rhythm and the
more than voices. I mean, I'm sure you've heard lots of dance records that are just chock full of these things. Every once in a while you hear what sounds like a whole orchestra playing a big note. Well, you know, this is all sampled stuff, and it's getting to be a real cliche. In fact, there's a couple of them on our record, and Elliot and I decided we just didn't want to have that stock last note of a Beethoven symphony sample that everybody uses. And what we did, we ended up using, Elliot's a great composer and has written a lot of contemporary, like, chamber music, and we used on the record some percussion samples of his, from his pieces, which I sampled directly from a cassette machine right into my terminal. I found the right key on the synthesizer so that the timing was right with the tempo of the track. And also, our orchestra thing that we used on the track is from one of Elliot's pieces for chamber orchestra, and it was a very strange chord that we used, not an atypical kind of event.
Now, I want to mention here that you've brought with you several different versions of the mix that we just heard of See the Light, Feel the Heat.
Right.
And we're going to hear it in its different stages of development.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we pause now and listen to the earliest stage. This was, I guess, the tape that you were presented by
this is,
your
yeah, collaborator. This is Elliot's original idea. And he did it at home on a four-track reel-to-reel machine, and he didn't have even a drum machine at home. He used, I believe, a record that's called Drum Drops. It's just a record of all different kinds of drum beats in, you know, like 3 minutes of disco one, 3 minutes of rock, you know, and he just put that on and that was his rhythm track. And, you know, so it's more or less a home demo of what we did.
Okay, why don't we listen to it and then we'll talk about how you changed it when you heard
it.
Same thing. Feel the heat. And that's been going on for years.
Well, that was an example of the demo recording that was made by Elliot Sokolov, who presented it to Jack Waldman,
right,
see if he wanted to work with him on it. And the voice, if you're just joining us, is the voice of President Reagan. The voice was synthesized from tapes of speeches that he's made over the past few years. Well, when you heard that, what did you think? You know, what did you think about what you could do with it?
I remember when I first heard, actually, there was another version that I heard as well. He did one called Presidential Tango. I believe that the last one we just heard actually did have a little drum machine. Presidential Tango was the one with the drum drops record. I remember hearing it at a mutual friend of ours' house and thinking, God, this is really a great idea. And it wasn't, it was several months after that, Elliot and I were talking, and he said, boy, I really would love to do something with that Reagan record. I said, man, you should. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and we became partners, you know. Really all that got taken from what we just heard is the phrase, see the light, feel the heat, which we both just thought had to be the hook, although we had so many hooks on our list, but we both felt strongly about it just because it sort of has there's something catchy about it. I don't really know what our real reason for choosing it was after looking at this list of 175 phrases, but for some reason that was our choice and that was where we were going with it, you know, and that was the title. How I came up with the rhythm structure for our track is kind of funny in a way. I mean, I've been involved with a lot of dance music, and over the past 6 months I'd become really a fan of a certain style of rap record that I just couldn't get out of my head. The real, like, gutsy, kind of honest-sounding, nasty, like Run DMC type stuff. And I don't get a chance to do a lot of that music. I found myself listening to a lot of it and being fascinated with breakdancers and et cetera, et cetera. I was leaning towards that direction. I thought that this should go in that direction. What I ended up doing was listening to a lot of the phrases, just a cappella. I mean, Elliot gave me a cassette and I just kept rewinding it and playing it. And I had a couple See the Light, Feel the Heats. I put them on in a row. And I found out that, you know, after snapping my fingers with just listening to him say See the Light, Feel the Heat 50 times, I just found his tempo. And it's not the ideal dance tempo, but Reagan speaks at 111. So I went to my drum computer, and I mean, that's that. I discovered that he speaks at 111, and the drum beat was really written around the phrase. The original drum beat for the whole piece just is a result of the inflection of the way he says "see the light." You know, we decided, of course, where in the bar the word "see" was going to come in, but it was that. It was really Reagan's voice that structured the whole thing, you know, and that's, I think that accounts for a lot of the sort of integrated sound of the record. Even though I got a lot of criticism from the real straight ahead dance remixers, like Jelly Bean said, well, I don't know, I think I would want to change it. I want to change the bass drum a little bit because it's kind of a jumpy beat. It's kind of almost abstract. It's almost too syncopated in a way. But it's insistent because it's so bare and it's so upfront that I feel that you get used to it. But, you know, I was determined to keep the beat the way it was because I really felt like this goes with the vocal. This is the way it has to be.
Why don't we hear a teeny bit of an edit that you did before the final mix was done?
Yeah, this is most of the studio tracks were done. This was a quick work. It's really a work mix is what it amounts to now in retrospect. Elliot and I had been up all night doing overdubs with my synthesizer with all the sampled stuff, all the Nancy and all that stuff. And we finished at like 8 in the morning, and then we were booked 10 a.m. at another studio across town, and we were like zombies carrying our tape across town. And we thought, well, we're going to have to mix this thing. We're on a deadline. We were on our own deadline. And we did five quick mixes, and I think if we'd had another hour, we might have been happier. But what we did was we edited down. We had 6 minutes or so of material. Our original track was about 6 minutes long. We made a 4-minute version, and which was what we brought around to record labels, and is what Streetwise finally got interested in putting out.
And what's the difference between what we're going to hear and the final mix?
The difference is primarily, for me, the difference is gigantic because it's much less dynamic, and it's mostly sound and structure. Sections are, it's actually, this version is a little more concise and a little bit more song form-ish than our finished version, which is a little more dance-oriented. But at the same time, I think that it's much less stimulating to the ear. It doesn't kind of, you know, knock you into listening to it. You know, it's less insistent.
Okay, well, let's listen to a minute of this.
Great.
And compare it with the original. My guest is Jack Waldman, who is the co-producer of a new record called See the Light, Feel the Heat, which features the voice of President Reagan in a rap record. And the voice has been gotten from speeches that he gave and then changed through synthesizers. So this is one of the mixes before the final record.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me say this. See the light. Feel the heat. See the light. Feel the heat. Take the ball and run with it. Take the ball and run with it. I think the ball is still in their court. Didn't have to be this way.
It's an excerpt of one of the earlier mixes of See the Light, Feel the Heat. And one of the things we're doing here is listening to how a record like this is put together, mm-hmm. step by step. Let's hear one more step. And what you've done with this record is really what I think most funk producers now are doing with their records. There's the different mixes, different versions. And what we're going to hear now is the dub side or the B side. Do you want to explain what the dub version of a record is?
Sure. I'll just preface it by saying that I really like our dub version the best of the two. A dub version is nothing more than, I think it really has grown out of the need for a B-side quickly on one side. But it's a way of presenting a lot of the material that's in a track that normally you wouldn't know about or hear. And it's kind of almost an instrumental, but it's not usually totally instrumental. And it allows the producer and or engineer to kind of get creative and play the board as an instrument. It's just the way, in the same way that DJs in clubs play records as an instrument. I mean, it's really interesting watching the whole transition of, you know, from being a musician to playing your part and then hearing it on the radio to being a musician, playing your part, and then hearing what the DJs do when they mix the records with other records to make the sound. I mean, the sound that kids dance to in the clubs have more to do with what the DJs are doing than with what I did, you know, on my sweating it out and getting the right sound for, you know, this song and that song. You know, they just want to mix them. And it's fantastic. I'm really excited by it. Some people are really put off by it, but I love to go to the Funhouse and stand in the booth with the DJs and watch what he does, you know, and listen and watch the kids react. It was great to hear this record played the first time at the Funhouse.
What gave you the most pleasure from the dub version that we're going to hear?
Well, first of all, it includes a little bit more of the instrumental events. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sampled instruments that aren't on the vocal version, obviously. There's some vocals on it, not a lot. But one thing that was kind of funny was Arthur Baker, when we were doing our mix, he stopped in. And the way it was structured was Elliot and I did a mix on a Sunday night, and then Arthur was going to do a couple mixes on Monday. And then on Tuesday, Elliot and I edited everything together, some of Arthur's stuff and some of ours. And Arthur was really into the record, but he was also doing a million other things. He was doing Diana Ross and something from Paul McCartney, and it was like, you know, impossible to even get him on the phone. So he stopped by when Elliot and I were mixing on the first night, And he said, why'd you do a piano track? And I thought, you know, what in the hell is, you know, I just couldn't imagine doing a piano track, which is something that would normally be very natural for me to do, obviously. And I don't think I would have done it if he didn't hang around. But he did, and I did. So I did a whole pass on the piano, and we have included some of that piano on our dub version.
Okay, so let's hear the dub version, which is the B-side of See the Light, Feel the Heat, which is a rap record using the voice of President Reagan, co-produced by my guest Jack Waldman, who also did all the synthesizer playing on this record.
My fellow Americans, give it to them.
Left, 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 left
side, left, and on the other side,
that was the dub side, or the B side, the dance version of See the Light, Feel the Heat, which was co-produced by my guest Jack Waldman, who also performed all the synthesizer parts on it. The voice was the voice of President Reagan. It was borrowed from speeches that he gave, which were recorded over the past few years, and then the voice was altered through synthesizers. And over the past half hour, we've heard various versions of that song. We've basically heard it develop through the process of editing and adding on different percussion and synthesizer lines. And Jack Waldman has also remixed and performed synthesizers on recordings by many well-known rock and funk recorders, and we'll be hearing some of those records during the final half hour of today's show. Let me just ask you, before we move off the subject of this record, mm-hmm. See the Light, Feel the Heat, which I should mention is on the Streetwise record label and performed by your group Air Force One, do you think it's going to get played on radio stations, you know, as part of the rock or funk format?
Well, obviously, we hope so. It's too early to say what's really... It's just been out a short time, and Streetwise is a relatively small company, and the promotion situation, I really don't know how far advanced it is at this moment on our record, per se. But I know they're beginning to get it around to radio stations in New York. I have a feeling that it'll probably... It's been played a couple places. It's been played on BAI in New York, and I think it's going to be played on KISS, which is one of the major dance stations. I don't believe it has been yet,
mm-hmm.
but they're shooting for it. It's funny how the reactions to this... record are, because people, especially stations or companies, when we were bringing it around to record labels, everybody loved it. And I'm sort of a personal friend of Ahmet Ertegun, Atlantic, and I brought it to him, and he was just thrilled with it, but just, nah, I can't put this out. I just know, I wish I could, you know. And he just felt socially tied, you know, his hands were tied. And I think that radio stations, I think, are a little apprehensive about playing stuff like this. Although I tend to think it's going to get played.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly hope so.
Synthesizers have really changed over the past 15 years in how they're used. I remember, like, on most rock records, the synthesizer line was basically a piano line, but it was played on a synthesizer, so you had this really buzzy
right, or that
version
really
of a piano
piercing,
line.
High-pitched.
Even worse, yes. And now you have really electronic sounds used completely differently, altering regular sounds, mm-hmm. and used percussively, not as if it were a
right.
piano. Were there any landmarks that are responsible for that transition from the piano-oriented synthesizer to the kind of work we've been hearing today on your record?
Mm. Well, I think there's any number. I know for myself, there was a period when I was telling before while we were playing the record. I was originally a jazz-oriented player, and I was what I would term myself now as a jazz snob. I mean, I didn't listen to rock, or I didn't even appreciate that electronic instruments such as electric guitar or organ, or I didn't take them seriously. I was an acoustic snob also. I think it's largely to do with a kind of an irritant quality that I found in the sounds and the way they were used. But that's changed so drastically. It's ironic, of course, now that all I'm doing is playing rock and playing mostly electronically oriented stuff. But I think that groups like Kraftwerk and Tangerine Dream were very largely responsible for originally extending the vocabulary of the instruments themselves, because they were willing to just take a shot and do something different. And also expanding everyone's kind of scope as a listener to accept the sounds, you know, rather than just the little channel of quote, serious electronic composition, you know, which was really a kind of a small, not listened to on a wide scale type of situation. You know, they sort of brought new sounds to a different framework, and that was a big turning point, I think.
You're called in now a lot on record dates to add a synthesizer line or to remix it mm-hmm. or to work with the remixer. Mm-hmm. Let's hear an example of a record that you were called in to do, to okay. add to and to change. And I'm thinking of the David Bowie record
right.
That we're going to hear. Do you want to tell us what you were asked
sure.
to do on this?
Well, the remix producer is named Steve Thompson. I got a call from him. I have never worked with him prior to this. He was called. It was a very last-minute affair. EMI Records got in touch with him, and they wanted this song remixed. It's going to be Bowie's new 12-inch, and it was like, ah, hurry up. Bowie was in Switzerland. Nobody could reach him. It was a crazy day. But it's usually a case of either somebody knowing exactly what they want to change, replace, or add, or it's a case of somebody not knowing at all what they want, but they want it different. That's the situation that I'm usually confronted with. This was a case of Steve knew that he didn't like the bass part, and he knew that he thought that the song was too full, and there was too much horns, and there was too much, you know, so that he knew what mix tricks he wanted to do. But he knew he didn't like the bass part. And it was a bass guitar, and it was kind of a walking, you know, it's a 6-8 type of shuffle feel that the track has, kind of old sounding. And the bass was kind of a walking bass, you know, like a quarter note walking feel. And I replaced the entire bass track with a synthesized bass sound and a part that I came up with, which goes with the drum part, of obviously, that was already there, but drastically alters the feel of the tune. I mean, I wish I had the album version. We could play a little bit of each. It's a good commercial. But in fact, the bass sound that I used was a sample that I created on my terminal, and it's a sample from a bass guitar, but played on a keyboard in such a way that a bass guitarist probably wouldn't play. It's sort of tasteless for a bass guitarist to play the way I played it on a keyboard, but it really made the track jump, and that's what Steve wanted.
This is a brand new record.
And it's not really out yet.
It's not really out
yet. I mean,
We're breaking a record.
I was working with Steve Thompson last night on another project, and I saw this in his briefcase, and I said, Steve, you got a copy of the record? Can I have it? And he said, yeah, I just got it today. I haven't even heard it. It was a pressing. So I grabbed it, and he let me take it last night since I was working till 4 in the morning with him.
And it's called?
It's called Tumble and Twirl.
Okay, and this is David Bowie. Going to sample a few of the records that my guest Jack Waldman has changed in the mix or added synthesizer lines to, such as the David Bowie record that we just heard. Now, it's funny, you work with all these stars and you probably never get to meet them because you're working with their tapes and
right.
not with their live performance.
I meet their multi-track tapes.
Pretty exciting.
Sometimes I meet the artists. Madonna was one that was, she was in the studio when we were doing the remix.
Do you have any idea what David Bowie thinks of this remix that you did?
Yes, I do, actually, just by coincidence. I also did another track from his album, a song called Tonight that he sang with Tina Turner, and I added some percussion parts, some sampled steel drums, and some synthesized percussion, part of which was a sound that kind of goes a really long, kind of almost like a bomb sound. And as it turns out, He wrote the song thinking of two people surviving a nuclear blast. And that's what was the whole song was written about. And when he heard it, he was so thrilled. He said, how did this guy know that that's what the song was about? Because nobody, I mean, he didn't necessarily, it was just a love song. Nobody really, it wasn't an obvious thing. And I just chose the sound by happenstance. But I'm a firm believer in chance operations and synthesizer playing. It's a very integral part of what I do.
This is your experimental background coming up.
Yeah, right, I guess so. Sorry.
No need to apologize.
But he was very happy with both of them, especially the sounds on Tonight. He was really thrilled.
Okay, let's give a listen to another record, and then we'll find out if that performer was as thrilled with the changes that you made.
Right.
And this is a record called Suspense by Tony Basil.
Right.
What were you called in to doctor on this?
Let's see. Oh, this was a case of a track that was produced by a very famous producer, Giorgio Moroder, who we all know has done lots of this kind of work. And this track just sounded like a lot of his kind of work. It was very kind of average sounding, a lot of great synthesizer washy sounds, chords, block chords following the melody, very predictable drum program, nothing exciting, no events. What we ended up doing was pulling about 8 faders away, taking tracks away, and we rebuilt parts. Tony just felt that there was no suspense. There was no feeling of suspense in the track at all, and it really was very dead. It sounded like a disco cut from the 70s. It was good. Everything was squeaky clean, recorded beautifully, and it was a bore. So the producer that I work with on this is a guy called John Luongo, who's fabulous. He's a New York remixer also. This was a case of, let's fool around with this and come up with something. And what I did, basically, you'll hear kind of trumpety kind of sounds that are playing in octaves. They're almost out of tune on purpose, kind of to create this tension feeling. And I also did some sampled backwards percussion, things that go like, that, you know, at key points that really, you know, kind of wake you up. It was just a question of creating suspense that wasn't there.
And was the Moroder version released?
No. Oh, yeah, actually, the Moroder version was the album cut, I think, and this became the single. I don't know if it's on the charts yet or still or what, but it's out now.
Okay, so this is Tony Basil on Suspense with a remixed version with synthesizer lines added by my guest, Jack Waldman. Tony Basil's record Suspense, and my guest Jack Waldman participated in the remix of that and added the synthesizer lines after some of the original tracks were deleted. Well, was she happy with that? She had asked you to do it.
That one I couldn't say. I know the record label was flipped over it, so I assume she liked it too. It's nice in this situation being able to kind of push my limits of kind of pushing my taste on the remixer, you know, the producer, whoever's, quote, in charge of the session, unquote. In that case, I mean, I'm a big fan of mallet type sounds, you know, percussive type sounds and synthesis, and like those marimbas and that kind of thing, I was, you know, able to sell to John really easily. He was really into it, and all those like almost vocal backwards effects right in the very beginning, those kind of cloudy, those are the kind of things that I really like a lot, and John gives me a lot of freedom. And it was fun to do. This record was really fun to do.
I could see some of those being very alienating for performers because, after all, here they are singing, and the record can be completely changed depending on who produces it, and who does the remix, and who the synthesizer player is. Mm-hmm. And I think usually the performer doesn't have all that much control, especially if they're new in the business.
Mm-hmm. It's true. That's true. I mean, in retrospect, with the Reagan record, Elliot and I like had total control.
Of course, President Reagan had no control.
He had no control. But, you know, and we didn't even really appreciate the fact until we were done. We said, wow, you know, we did what we wanted to, didn't we? You know, it's done. It's, you know,
but do you think
a good feeling.
Do you think you're sometimes really resented, though, by the performers and the bands because you come in and you completely change what was
originally
done?
Like on the Bowie record, what we listened to earlier, the bass player, Carmen Rojas, happens to be a friend of mine and a guy that I work with. And I just was on a session with him last night, and he just got back. He was on the road with John Waite, and we were working together and doing a track for this new EMI singer. And he said, oh, yeah, so I hear you did the Bowie thing. And I said, yeah, man, sorry. You know, it's like, it's a funny thing. You know, we're kind of joking, but, you know, the reality of it is they dumped his part, and I replaced it. You know, what can you say?
Or it's kind of like bringing a record to a plastic surgeon
or something, and getting
the nose changed.
It is. It's a nose job. Exactly.
So do you think that the record industry has become records have become a producer's medium as opposed to a band or a singer's medium?
I think on one level they have become more so, but I think that not to replace the band medium. I think the band thing is still very strong, and you know, on certain records, groups just aren't interested in bringing people in. On the Billy Idol record that I played on Rebel Yell, which is a really popular record, his guitarist is kind of the band leader, Steve Stevens, who I think is a genius, fabulous musician. They were really conscious of maintaining what they wanted to do, and I was just integrated into their picture, which was a delightful situation. I mean, I thrive on both. You know, I obviously like variety. And it was, you know, very rewarding to be able to fit in really easily, you know.
You've worked a lot with Jellybean Benitez, mm-hmm. who's one of the leading dance remixers.
Yes, he's very
in New
now.
York. Right. So before we hear a record that you worked on with him, mm-hmm. what are his trademarks? What's he known for?
Well, he's done just scores of remixes. I mean, remixes that people wouldn't even necessarily know, like going back, I don't even know how far, but Say, Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney. And, you know, he's done a lot of Michael Jackson stuff, both R&B and, you know, straight funk and rock. He has a gigantic set of ears, and he's patient and he's willing to take the time to make the record sound the way he thinks it should sound.
Is there a sound that you
associate? Him a lot. Yeah, I do. I associate percussion. And that's why I think we get along so well, because our tastes are very similar in that area. When Jellybean remixes a record, two people usually get called, or three. Another synthesizer player or myself, and a percussionist. You know, there's like the three of us that usually work with him on a remix. And you know, the first thing you want to do is put percussion on. And he's known for extended percussion breaks, like on his song The Mexican. He has like very long extended percussion breaks on the Madonna single too. He's done a lot of that.
We're going to hear the opening couple of minutes of The Mexican. Is
okay,
there anything
great
you'd like us to listen for in this?
Well, just the percussion is fabulous. Also, there's a drive that he gets without making his record sound like everyone else's. There's so many records nowadays that have the gigantic drum sound. It sounds like the bass drums in the tunnel, in the Holland Tunnel, and the snare drum is in a glass room, and all of a sudden somebody snapped a pair of earphones on you, so you just hear, you know. I think that's getting really tiresome. It sounds wonderful, and it's the big hi-fi sound. Jellybean doesn't rely on that as a standard, oh, gosh, I have to get this drum sound to be cool. He gets punch from placing things in very specific areas, and it's very clearly evidenced on the Mexican, because he uses a very low fidelity drum machine instead of the big technical digital machines, and it's really exciting.
And what are you doing on this?
I played all the lead lines on synthesizer, kind of actually a very similar bell-like marimba sound to what we heard on the Tony Basil record. I doubled with a guitar.
Okay, so this is the Jelly Bean Benitez record, The Mexican. That synthesizer line you're listening to is played by my guest Jack Waldman, who's also a record producer and remixer, and he worked on that album by Jelly Bean Benitez. I've been realizing that there's this whole new language that people like you use.
Right.
How about repair and replace? Now, what does that mean?
Well, repair and replace is sort of a term that I've coined more than being a general term, but I do a lot of, in this remix game. You know, a producer finds something, oh gosh, this is out of tune or this doesn't sound right to me, and I end up, what I call repairing is playing the same line with a similar sound but changing something, the articulation, the tuning, the phrasing, or the sound slightly to make it smoother, to make it sharper, but taking an original idea from a track and redoing it. That's kind of repairing. Replacing is dumping a track and putting something else there, to replace, that, of course, is more fun because it involves coming up with an idea, as well as a sound.
A lot of people categorically hate electronic music and synthesizers and think of it in the same way that they do of automation, that it's mechanized, it's cold, and it replaces real people, it replaces real musicians and real instruments. Do you feel that way?
I just can't get too serious about it. I don't think it replaces real musicians. I don't think there's anything that can replace the spark of a drummer and a bass player locking into a rhythm figure. What it does is approximates that function in the many cases. I mean, okay, these devices are obviously used on all these records, and there are a lot of drummers that would have played those drum tracks. But just as a drummer can't sound like a drum machine, I don't think a drum machine can sound like a drummer. They can approximate one another. So it's really a successive approximations game. And I don't really think that all the hubbub about, by musicians' unions, and I don't think it's going to do any good, so I think it's a futile situation. And with the advent of these digital synthesizers that can sample acoustic instruments, like what I've used on the Reagan record, and I'm currently producing a record for Island for a new artist, Jamie Bernstein, and we're using digital synthesis. We've spent 2 weeks just sampling instruments. I had a good friend of mine, bass player, come in. We paid him for a session, and he sat there and played a few licks for us, which we sampled. And I have a box full of discs that's Chris Bishop's bass, which we're going to use as our bass in a couple songs. I don't really think – I think it's a creative – it's a next extension. It's another instrument. It's not a replacement of people.
Okay. We have about a minute left, so a couple of quick questions here. You do all these dance records. Do you dance?
In my mind.
Not on the floor.
I find myself wishing that I could be a 14-year-old black kid and could do all those moves, but I don't really try to. I move a lot when I play, even in the studio. I've noticed people remark at that. But so, I mean, there's a kinetic, there's a necessary kinetic function about playing and about music that has to be there for me to be happy with a part or a sound or, you know. So I move around a lot, but I'm not really a dancer. I don't go to clubs to dance. I go more to listen and to watch.
What do you watch for?
Reactions. I watch for how kids react to certain records that I like. You know, I like to see how my taste as a musician compares with their taste as kids in a club. You know, sometimes has nothing to do with each other, and sometimes it's right dead on. You know, it's really interesting.
Well, this has really been fun. I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
It's been great.